There's this Buddhist magazine called Tricycle, which did me a really nice honor. They asked me to have a large involvement with their next issue, which is coming out, I don't know when, but soon, I guess. And one of the things they wanted me to do besides writing something was to give four talks for their website. And sort of four talks, an overview of all the Buddhist teachings and working with addiction. So, and I had to give them all one day, one afternoon. And so by the end of it, I was just spiritually spent. I had spiritually climaxed and spent. I was a complete empty shell of all spiritual thought. And so I didn't until this weekend think about what I was going to talk about this week. And experience presented itself to me, which is an experience that I've never given a talk about in 7 or 8 years of teaching. I've given a lot of talks on dealing with difficult people, though our podcast site is loaded with talk after talk of strategies of difficult conversations, dealing with difficult people. But once in a while in New York, no matter how skillfully you try to live, you might have a run-in with somebody insane. You might actually wind up in a situation where no amount of reason or skillful or most skillful behavior will help you. What was happening for me, the thing that occurred, was riding on my bike, and in the bike lane with a green light, going at a completely calm adult, middle-aged adult speed, aware of one's own mortality speed, and all the pedestrians, you know, they had seen me and they had stopped, and then one guy walked right in to the bike lane, and not only did that, then he stopped right there to look at his phone, and I screeched to a halt. And I stopped, and I said, involuntarily, I said, "Christ, what are you doing?" I don't know why Christ comes out of my mouth, but whenever something's wrong, I never say Buddha, you know, Sakka, the great Buddhist teacher. No, I say Christ. It's my father coming out of me. Christ, what are you doing? And the guy just looked at me with this profoundly unintelligent look, and then nothing happened, and then I just shrugged, and I still had the green light, and so I just got back on my bike around him and rode, and then as I'm midway through the light on First Avenue on 9th Street, the guy thoughtfully calls up and he says, "Hey, motherfucker, go fuck yourself." And so, as a New Yorker, that's an invitation to dance, basically. But what I did instead was I actually, first thing I did was I just laughed, because he waited until I'm halfway through my back to him, and I just turned around and I said like this, and then I went like that, and then I said, "Go fuck yourself too." And then he got really angry and he said, "No, go fuck yourself. Come, go fuck yourself. Come here. I'll kick your ass. Come here." It's like, then, "Come here." Like, I don't even know what that means. "Go fuck yourself. Come here. I'll kick your ass." Not an invitation that I was looking to. And I just, at that point, I just started laughing. And I just smiled, waved, and just kept on. Now, I think I was holding the bird while I rode on. But it brings up an interesting thought, which is that a lot of times in spiritual practice, it's very easy, especially when you've been at it for decades, it's very easy to think, well, this is not supposed to happen, ever. And then also there's this thing where if there's any sense of conflict, there's this sense of, oh my God, aren't I supposed to be completely, you know, equanimous? Shouldn't I just be practicing with everything? Shouldn't I allow the world to shit on me? Mm-hmm. And simply, oh, it's nasty shit today. You know, this is, you know, ugly shit today. Thank you, I'll work with this. And of course, that's not at all what the Buddha taught, nor is it all at all what would lead to lasting calmness, lasting peace of the body fabrication and the mental fabrication. It actually, this idea of simply allowing people to completely roll over us is not, in the Buddha's teaching, skillful. The problem is that a lot of times we associate defending ourselves with anger. The idea is that part of the practice of making sure that people don't fuck with us or trample over us, that's why we have anger. It's the thing that makes us stand up for ourselves. It's the thing that establishes boundaries. It's a lot of people want anger to be the thing that fires social engagement and activism. And when they hear that the Buddha counseled against anger throughout his teachings, including the Dhammapada, which says that anger always gives birth to unskillfulness and more suffering, as surely as the cart follows the horse that pulls it. The idea can be, well, then he wants us to be a pushover. He's basically asking us to lie down and invite people to act however they want. And actually, this is not the case. Before I go into conflict with specific people who you cannot really have a constructive dialogue with, I should note that social activism and engaged practice is very important, but the way that it's sustainable is through compassion, caring about people who are suffering, caring about our own suffering. I've done a lot of activism in my life, and the people who are fired by outrage and anger, whereas that can be a wonderful tool, it seems, at the beginning, those people almost invariably burn out. And almost invariably, they turn a lot of that anger inwards towards the people they work with and towards themselves. Whereas the people who are fired by a sense of compassion, they rarely burn out. And their engagement, like Thich Nhat Hanh's engagement, lasts for decades and decades and decades without any diminishment. So I thought I'd talk about engaging with dangerous situations and conflict from the three different perspectives, before, during, and after. That's so clever of me. I like the way I break these things down. Before, during, and after. It's like something one of my middle school teachers would have done. I felt so good when I realized that. No, I felt fine, that it fell so nicely into it. So, the idea also is that anger is the thing that not only protects us, but it's the thing that, along with resentment, keeps us guarded so that those people out there who are acting like assholes won't trick us again. That if we carry around anger or resentment, that's our way of protecting ourselves from falling into the same trap. And hopefully tonight we'll discuss the Buddhist approaches that are alternatives to protecting ourselves, to establishing boundaries, to not getting trampled over, yet at the same time not causing unnecessary suffering. Now, one of my favorite teachers, Ajahn Chah, said that the practice, he said, of the spiritual practice itself was not when we're sitting on the cushion, or not even when we're hanging out with our spiritual friends, our support groups. But he said the real practice is what happens when you've run against somebody who's really unskillful, who's really, really angry, who's so stressed out that they can't, and they're riling you up, and you feel the heat and the energy riling up in your body. That's when the practice is. One of the likenesses that his students, Ajahn Manindo, used was that in mountain climbing books, they say that the bulk of the work is not the climbing of the mountain or the reaching of the top. It's preparing the kit so that you have everything you need for every, situation. But then all of that practice and preparation might come into play just one moment during the actual climb when you're faced with a life and death decision. And you have to have the right tools, and you have to be calm, and you have to have worked through it. So very much we can tell where we are with our spiritual practice very often when we are face to face with an intransigent situation, with somebody who is not going to listen to reason, who is so driven by their own suffering or by their own frustrations in life that they're just basically coming at us. One of the Buddha's teachings in the layperson suttas talks about part of the work is that if we keep our awareness centered, relaxing the body, not being so externally focused all the time, that we don't stumble into as many altercations because we're not even tripping upon these people. These people who are driven are looking for somebody to tangle with. They're looking for that energy that we're engaging with them. And sometimes just simply the balance of having an awareness that's partially at least focused on keeping ourselves calm and our awareness centered is skillful enough. In the layperson's practitioner and the layperson suttas, he also talks about the importance of knowing which places are unsuitable for us. And this simply means that as time passes in life, we might begin to find that certain places, certain kinds of people, groups of people that we used to at one point in our life have a lot of fun with, we might begin to realize that after we hang out with them, the results become less sustainably wonderful over as we get older. I'm not saying that every bar is a challenging or not necessarily a good place. I love to see friends, bands, and bars, but it's good to notice which places tend to foster conflict. It's good to notice which situations tend to have aggression to them and make wise choices before we even go into them. The Buddha in the Sabbasava Sutta mentioned that he talked about the importance of two practices with other people. He said, the bulk of our practice most of the time is learning to tolerate irritable people, because in life there'll be so many irritable things that occur. There'll be criticisms, there'll be slights, there'll be people acting unskillfully. And every single time we have to immediately we have to avoid or confront. That's not a skillful strategy. But the Buddha said there are certain people who like, and he goes on to list dangerous animals and cliffs and stuff like that. And he says, thus as there are dangerous holes in the ground and dangerous wild animals, there are certain people who no matter how you engage with them, the result is unskillful. These are people who are extremely drama prone, who are extremely likely to suck you into some drama which you won't be able to escape from. People who are hell-bent on confrontation. People who are caught up in anger to the point where we can't even begin to be heard as we try to propose different perspectives. In such cases, the Buddha counseled avoiding them, which is simply, if somebody acts unskillfully, does something that's very hurtful, or we see beyond a doubt that the results of hanging out with this person are invariably stress-inducing, it's best not to try to change them, because that's a failing strategy. It's best not to try to simply be with anything, because that's an unrealistic strategy. The best thing to do is to, as in the practice of upekkha, to see, okay, whatever this person's karma, their past actions, is right now, I can't work with it. I can't be safely around it. This practice is not me. It's simply developing a set of boundaries that help to prevent us from suffering unnecessarily. And also, to follow one of the Buddha's wonderful teachings, if you prevent somebody from doing something unskillful to you, you're actually helping them because they have less bad karma they have to undo in the future. Now, avoidance is obviously one strategy, but then there are times when, unfortunately, confrontations do occur, hopefully very infrequently. Just on this note, thankfully, I've never been in a physical confrontation in over 20 years. Thankfully, because I fight like a girl. I do. Girls, actually, to apologize to you, probably fight a lot more better than I do. My wife laughs at me when I try to show what it's like when I punch. I just do not have any effective or aggressive bones in me. So, but from my experience, from reading the Dhamma, from studying with the monks I've studied with, one of the teachings of the Buddha is that if somebody attacks you, it's perfectly reasonable to defend yourself. The teaching goes that under no circumstances should we intend to kill someone else. That would be to violate the first precept. And whenever I've studied with Ajahn Jeff, the great monk, there's always some person who says, well, suppose they have a gun and you have a gun. People always go to this, like, you know, the climax of a horrible movie with the monks, you know. And Ajahn always says, well, you try to shoot them in a way that would disarm them, but you don't intentionally try to kill. You don't intentionally try to do anything that goes beyond the state of physically rendering them incapable of injuring you. There's a part in the Pachita, which is the monk's code, where it says a monk that strikes anyone out of anger is violating the precepts for the monks, but a monk who defends himself not out of anger is not. So the idea then becomes, how can we protect ourselves without developing anger? And this teaching goes on furthermore. The Buddha, in one of the most famous teachings, he said, if you are traveling down the road and you're set upon by a gang of bandits and they started to beat you up and rob you, he said, if you feel any anger for them, then you don't understand his teaching. But then later on, he says, if you defend yourself without developing anger, that's perfectly reasonable. The great Buddhist monk Manjushri, and I can't find this, it's been quoted to me by another teacher, but I can't find the actual quote, so I'm taking it on faith. But apparently Manjushri taught that, he was talking with somebody whose wife and child and him were set upon by bandits. And he had a club. And Manjushri said, well, I hope with all the love in your heart, you beat the assailant over the head with the club to ward them off. Now, I've never read that one, but the ideas here become, how can we engage without developing the outrage, the heat, the violence of anger? And I was doing some research, and actually it's interesting that there's a site that collects the masters of Taekwondo. And I know about as much about Taekwondo as I do of gardening, which is nothing. But I looked up and I found this right in the front. They said, the mistaken idea of practitioners is that being relaxed is the antithesis of being powerful. People think that when you're relaxed, you are weak and pliable. But being relaxed is being devoid of unnecessary tension and anxiety. The tension is physical, such as using your muscles, while the anxiety is in your mind. What you are looking for is a calm mind free of anger. The idea being that when we are angry, in fact, what happens is we're more likely to lose control, do something we regret, escalate the confrontation, fail to notice ways to avoid the confrontation when there are ways. We get ourselves more and more into the interpersonal aggression, the more anger we feel. It's a very outward-pouring emotion. The goal is to stay, they said, calm, to move the legs so that the body balance is lower. Now, this in Buddhism is very important. The more we are focusing our awareness on the body and lowering it into the body experience, the less I'm paying attention to you and the things you're saying to me. The less I'm being drawn into and being heated by what you're saying. The more I am physically present, I'm in my body, the less I'm being sucked into the conflict. I think there was one more thing they said that was really quite wonderful. Yes, and they also said, rather than listening to what your opponent says to egg you on, they urge you to reflect on the things that your teacher have taught you, your Taekwondo teacher has taught you. And I think this is wonderful because the Buddha counseled when someone is acting unskillfully, rather than listen to them, just reflect on the basic teachings, which is that this will pass. All things are impermanent. Staying calm, breathing deeply, relaxing the body fabrication. Just recite these things and recite, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, may I be free of stress. Even these chants will save us from being pulled in. Now, I'd like to talk briefly about the after. A good deal of the real harm that comes after insane conflicts, people shouting, people swearing, people engaged in aggression, is that we tend to carry it around with us for a long period afterwards. We tend to repeat the aggression over and over in our minds. We tend to look for a meaning to it, often when there is no meaning. We tend to try to reassure ourselves of our being in the right. most of the time, if you're a spiritual practitioner, it's unlikely that you're going out, you know, trying to pick a fight with someone. And yet, when this aggression happened, that was one of the first things I had to work on, was letting go of the self-justification. I had to, my mind wanted to repeat my court case in my mind. I was in the bike lane. I had the green. He stopped in front of me. He swore at me. There was no court case. I hadn't done anything unskillful. But still, my mind wanted to reflect on it and repeat it. So there's three ways we carry around conflict afterwards. The Buddha said we carry it around in the physical, the body. We carry it around in the verbal, our thoughts. And we carry it around in the emotional, the feelings. So quickly, the goal is to breathe, scan the body for tension, and as quickly as possible after an altercation, a conflict, an event, relax the body. The body will be carrying so much adrenaline and so much cortisol that it won't quickly respond. It'll take about 15 minutes at the very least, but it's good to start the process of triggering the amygdala. The amygdala, once you've been in an altercation, it will be pumping out adrenaline, pumping out cortisol. So we want to stop that by taking deep breaths in the chest, which trigger the vagus nerve and stop all the production of the fight or flight hormones, and start releasing serotonin. That's the first step. The second step is allowing ourselves to experience the physical anger, the emotional anger, without going into the story over and over again. What this means is repressing anger is a bad idea. The idea that, oh, I shouldn't feel anger, I'm the reincarnation of the Buddha, you know, don't you know who I am, I'm a spiritual being, blah, 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 all that shit. Yeah. The idea that we shouldn't be feeling this is not skillful. The goal is to experience the physical nature of the emotions, the heat, the mind feeling agitated, but not to repeat the story, the event, or the outrage. So we feel the emotions, but we don't repeat the thoughts that go along with it. It's very much an internal experience. And sometimes I bring this about by, after this event, I later on in the day said, okay, this guy wanted to, you know, get in a fist fight with you. How does that feel? Just how does it feel when somebody's, when this happens? And I wouldn't allow myself to repeat the story any further or visualize them. I just said, asked myself, how does it feel to be attacked? And then I looked into my experience and I felt my mind just becoming more bouncy and energized. And I felt my breath become shorter and I felt the heat in the stomach. And I just allowed them to rise. And then I asked myself, okay, now how does it feel to let go of this? And then I allowed it to dissipate. This is how we go through grieving, how we go through loss, frustration. All of these emotions we don't suppress. We ask ourselves, how does it feel? We allow it to rise, and then we invite it, after we've felt it, to subside. This is working with feelings, not pushing them down. Finally, the thoughts. It's important not to recite the court case in our mind, to relive over and over and over again. The good thing about having an amygdala is that the next time you see somebody who's an absolute shit, your mind will remember. You don't have to carry it around. That's what your unconscious does for you. You have a little part of your brain tucked back there, and it's connected to the fusiform gyrus, which memorizes what people look like. And the moment you've been in an unskillful or dangerous situation with somebody, you don't need to add any more to it. You've got a very rich unconscious mind that will let you know the next time you see them. Your stomach will get tight, the thoughts will immediately pop up, warning you. So the idea that we have to carry around our resentments to protect ourselves or to in some way process them, it's not true. Repeating obsessively the events that happened to us do not help us. All they do is they keep us suffering. They keep triggering the release of stress hormones, adrenaline and cortisol. They keep us trapped in the past. Very often people can be caught up in conflict years after it passes. So the way we avoid this is we feel the feelings, but we replace the thoughts with what? We forgive ourselves, and we then forgive them. After a few days passed, and I really wasn't thinking too much about the guy, but I just decided it would be a good idea anyway, I brought to mind one time in my life when I thought I had a green light, and a guy in a car nearly ran me over. And I shouted, "What the fuck are you doing?" And he started shouting at me. And then my friend said, "Well, you know, actually you were looking at the wrong light. You had gone through the red light." And I felt so embarrassed. You know, I must have seemed like an insane person to the guy. So I reflected on that and I forgave myself. And I said, well, in my mind, it was part of being a human being. Next time I have to reflect on this. And then I brought to mind the guy that challenged me to a fight. And I simply thought, well, just like I've acted unskillfully in my past and I deserve forgiveness, I'm going to forgive him. And I brought to mind what I think he looked like. And I thought, may you be forgiven. May you be happy. And that was it. Haven't thought of him since. So I thank you for listening. I hope there was something tucked in there that was worthwhile for you. And